all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800. We're happy today to welcome to Veterans Radio Keith Alaniz, an Army veteran and entrepreneur, and he brought back from Afghanistan a business idea. You will think he was nuts when he started this. Keith, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's tease him a little. We won't tell him exactly the nature of the business till we talk a little bit about your background and your co-founders' backgrounds. Tell us how you got into the Army and a little bit of your experiences.
Well, Jim, I started in the Army. I joined when I was 17. Joined the reserves. Went to Texas A&M University and commissioned from there. Spent 9.5 years on active duty, and my partners and I met while serving in the military. I met my partner Kim while we were on emergency operations in New York for Hurricane Sandy, and she had met our other partner Emily through West Point, so they both graduated together from West Point.
You skipped over this a little bit, and as an old civil engineer myself, I want to call out that you went to Texas A&M and got your degree in civil engineering, and went on to the University of Missouri and picked up a master's in engineering management. So you had some unique skills that you were utilizing in the Army. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so we were all actually Corps of Engineer Army officers. I was pretty fortunate to be able to use my engineer skills with the actual U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in Afghanistan. So that was my first introduction to, the Afghanistan business environment. And, you know, for those not familiar with the Corps of Engineers, they're the biggest architectural engineer firm in the world. They have something like 100,000 plus employees. And at the time in Afghanistan in, 2011, they were spending about $5 billion a year creating infrastructure for the Afghan National Security Forces. So I was fortunate to be part of that program and managed the program building infrastructure in a remote province called Badakhshan. And that was a good introduction to how business is done in Afghanistan, which, you know, surprisingly is not very much different from the way it's done here, except that all the mechanisms for doing business, particularly in construction, they exist in Afghanistan. But whereas here you would have performance bonds that you would pay a bank and you would have you'd have to pay insurance to ensure that you complete the work, and contractors would have insurance to ensure that they're paid properly. In Afghanistan, that might look more like, you pay a percentage to the local strongman to ensure that your contractors are, performing work, and the contractors will pay the same strongman to ensure they're getting paid on time. It's very interesting, but you can imagine that all these mechanisms, they exist there. And at the end of the day, everybody's just trying to, do business, and just like here, business is all built on relationships. You might not have the court system in Afghanistan to lean on if someone goes awry of a contract, but same thing here. Like if you're going to court over a contract, it's already deteriorated to the point where it's not really salvageable. So it's important to have strong relationships over in Afghanistan, just like it is here.
Well, that's a very practical answer. I'd never thought about it in terms of the insurance requirements we might have here in the States. Well, that you're sort of ensuring that things get done by involving the local tribal strongman into your dealings as well by paying him a little something. So interesting correlation. I wouldn't have.
Yeah, I worked for a year here with an engineering firm in Chicago, and working with the aldermen is not a lot different than working with the tribal leaders.
Well, let's not make the listeners wait any longer. Let's tell them of the idea that you developed and the business that you and your partners are involved in, that is utilizing all that Afghan experience and bringing something to market. Tell us about Rummy Spice.
So Rumi Spice is a social enterprise, and we started in 2014. My partners, Kim and Emily, were at Harvard Business School, and I was serving in Afghanistan in my last tour over there. I had ran into a farmer named Haji Yosef, and he had this incredible red spice. I knew nothing about it. Did a little research, and I found out this red spice called saffron is the most valuable spice in the world. It's worth its weight in gold. And as Haji Yosef put it, he would grow a lot more of the saffron, but he doesn't have a market for his products. He can only sell it in his local market. And I had recognized this problem from other industries in Afghanistan. You know, there's a lot of capacity, and there's a lot of great products, particularly in the agricultural sector. But the lack of infrastructure, the lack of access to markets, means that farmers, producers, they're not going to produce more without having a place to sell it. So, I got on the phone with Kim and spoke with her and said, hey, this might be a business opportunity. If we can connect these farmers with Western markets, you know, make a market for saffron in the U.S., we could catalyze economic development by providing a market for Afghan products. Now we've incentivized the farmers to grow more. And, you know, the more that they're producing, the more jobs they're creating. And, you know, by the way, saffron is a great alternative to opium, which, you know, for those following the Afghan war, opium is what fuels the revenue for the Taliban and other insurgent groups. It's an illegal crop. Farmers don't grow it because, you know, they love opium, but they grow it out of necessity that they're not able to get another valuable crop to market. With saffron, they can make 6 to 10 times the value of opium or poppy by growing saffron, and they don't have any of the risk that's associated with growing an illicit crop. The government won't come down and burn their fields. You know, they're dealing with legitimate businesses. So there's a lot of good that comes with turning farmers from opium to saffron.
Well, I want to back up. We're talking to Keith Allen. He's co-founder of Rumi Spice, which takes Afghan saffron and brings it to Western markets. But, Keith, explain to me how a nice Texas A&M engineer ever thought he had the entrepreneurial chops to pull this off.
Yeah, I think part of that is just, being in the military, having been given what seems like impossible missions and having to figure out a way to accomplish it. I think that's something that every person who served probably gets at some point. And, call it what you will. Maybe it's a little bit crazy. It's certainly audacious, but I think that that's something that a lot of veterans bring, you know, especially to the entrepreneurial landscape, is that willingness to accomplish the mission and just figure out a way to get it done. So, you know, at the time, we didn't know anything about the saffron market. We didn't know if we were going to be able to create a market for this product. We didn't know the size of the market. But, you know, as they say in the Corps of Engineers, you know, essay on, let us try. So we definitely, we've created a niche opportunity here, and we're, you know, really fortunate to partner with some great Michelin star restaurants, and, you know, people are starting to recognize the value of Afghan saffron, its superior quality, and they certainly like to support the social mission.
So Rumi Spice is headquartered out of Chicago. It started 3 years ago. When you started, how many Afghan farmers were you involved in? And tell us a little bit of how you go from the flour to the food grade quality saffron.
Yeah, it's super interesting. You know, every once in a while I run into someone who randomly knows a lot about saffron. So for your listeners, they're going to be those people who know way too much about how saffron is grown and produced. I'll start talking about how we met the farmers. The first farmer, Haji Yosef, is the one that I met who brought me the saffron. And then my partner, Kim, as a civilian, traveled to Afghanistan and met with a group of 10 other farmers in Herat province, where most of the saffron is grown. And so those were our first partners that we started working with. Initially, the farmers were a little bit skeptical, especially doing business with, you know, a woman, you know, and doing business with Americans. They didn't know if we were there for a one-off purchase, which, you know, they're happy to sell us the saffron, but, you know, we promised we'd come back and we'd buy more the next year. You know, fast forward, now we've grown from those 10 farmers to almost 100 farmers, and each farmer that's been in our network will double and triple their production year over year. So we provided them that certainty that there's someone there to buy their product. You know, they sell to us, but they also sell to other people as well. So it's been very successful for the farmers. And those first 10 farmers that we started working with, you know, they just love us now. They're very proud to know that their product is sitting on the shelves in U.S. stores. And, you know, another byproduct of that is, you know, the next time an insurgent or Taliban come around and try to tell them how Americans are infidels, they're going to have a hard time convincing these farmers who view the Americans as their customers and are providing their livelihood. Go back
for those folks who don't know. I've been on your website, which is great, and we're going to promote it here shortly. How do you actually get the saffron? How's it grown? What part of the flower? This sort of thing.
So saffron comes from the stigmas of a crocus flower. Each flower produces 3 stigmas, and the stigmas are there's a red component, which is where the saffron comes from, and then there's a yellow component, which is the pistil of the plant that doesn't have any taste or nutritional value. That yellow part has to be trimmed off. The saffron stigmas have to be extracted. They have to be cleaned. They have to be dried. They have to be cleaned again, and it takes about 150 hours of labor to produce every 10 grams of saffron. Just for numbers, 1 kilogram of saffron, which is worth anywhere between $1,600 to $2,000 in the market as a raw product, 1 kilogram of saffron takes 150,000 flowers to produce, which is a whole lot of labor. It's why it's an ideal place in Afghanistan where the cost of labor is low, and the climate in Afghanistan is actually ideal for growing saffron.
Yeah, are the crocuses in Afghanistan seasonal like they are here in the United States, or at least in the northern climes where you only get them for a very short period of time? What's your available market period then?
Yeah, the crocus, it grows late fall, so you know the first temperature drop is when the flowers start blooming in Afghanistan. So we have a short period of time where we need to harvest all the flowers and get them to the processing centers, get them processed and dried while the flowers are fresh. So usually late October, early November is when the harvest will occur. So it's a little bit of a challenge for us as we have to project our demand over the entire year for purchase during one time and present some cash flow challenges. But each year we've exceeded our projections. So we've always gone back mid-year to buy saffron off the market. To meet demand.
So you mentioned a processing plant. We might think about that a certain way here in the United States of a processing plant. But tell us what a processing plant when you're producing the saffron really looks like.
Yeah, you know, before we got involved, saffron was traditionally processed in farmers' homes. Close to the farms, they'd lay out a mat. They'd sit around with the women in their family and women from the village, and they would extract these things by hand, and they would air dry the saffron. And that was the way it was done until we kind of came into the picture. There was a handful of people processing it in, you know, buildings with closed doors and windows, on elevated surfaces, which, you know, that provides for a much cleaner product. But what we had to do is, recognizing that there wasn't really the established industry there, we had to invest in, you know, a processing facility. So we rented out a room. We hired a manager in Afghanistan, and, you know, we started hiring the women ourselves. And by the way, saffron is traditionally, all the labor is done by women just because it's like delicate work. And that's another great social good that comes out of our mission, is that we're providing women with these, paychecks, which in Afghan society is pretty transformative. There's not a lot of opportunities for women to find work. So, you know, these processing centers, it's just, you know, large rooms with tables. The women come in and work during daylight hours, processing saffron. And it's a pretty complex operation. We had over 300 women this last year working in 3 processing centers. And so that requires a lot of management, and just coming in and out of the building. And, you know, when we first started, there were some other challenges we had to deal with. This is the first time that, we were asking women to leave their house and come work in a processing center. So our manager had to like go to a lot of these heads of household and basically interview, and they had to feel like he's a trustworthy guy and that they would trust their daughters to go out and work. And actually now we're the largest private sector employer of Afghanistan women. So we've come a long way, and now people recognize us.
It's an incredible story. I got to believe that, you know, you talk about trying to win the hearts and minds of your enemy. I got to believe that the work you're doing beats the pants off of some of the other work that's being done by the government trying to win the hearts and minds of people.
Yeah, you know, I strongly believe like this is the way to bring about stability. I mean, it's you know, they talk about the three legs of stability, and it's economy, security, and it's a political. You know, what we're doing is involving all three of those. You know, we don't have to come in with guns. You know, we're providing security by providing jobs. You know, it provides economic development, and you know, we involve the government officials in charge of agriculture, the what they call the DAIL, the agricultural investment representative in the city. We're part of the Saffron Union, so you know, a lot of what we do has that holistic, you know, stability in mind.
I'll tell you what, I
you know, having served in Afghanistan for you know, over 2 years on the ground, you know, and been with, you know, been everywhere from like a big base to, you know, a special operations unit living in tents on the side of a mountain. I can tell you the amount of money that we spend, you know, to have people over there is, you know, we're talking like millions of dollars a day, whereas we've invested, you know, a little over $500,000, and the stability that we've provided in these villages where we work is pretty incredible.
Well, I think it's just amazing what three Army Corps of Engineer types have pulled off here. And one of the things I'm interested in is, so I can't imagine that logistically was a lot of infrastructure for the storage and maintenance of Saffron and then the transportation of Saffron out of Herat, which is sort of northwest Afghanistan. How'd you get it to the markets back here in the United States?
Yeah, you know, Jim, that was pretty challenging at the beginning, but I'll tell you, you know, after a while, working the logistics of getting Saffron out is actually the easiest part of what we do. I think the challenge is just, you know, continuing to find bigger and bigger markets for the product. But, you know, once the Saffron's process, it's very valuable, and it's very valuable in Herat because that's where the buying and selling is taking place. So our Saffron is stored in various locations under armed guard until we can receive it here in the U.S. You know, we ship our Saffron by air because the price to weight ratio is so high, we can profitably ship it via DHL. But we take a lot of security precautions when we're transporting our Saffron. And then, you know, the other aspect is that we try to meet the highest standards of food safety procedures. So all of our Saffron is tested prior to being shipped. We send samples of our Saffron to the U.S. We get it tested in a laboratory to meet all the food safety requirements. And then once it gets a green light, we ship it from Afghanistan. So it actually moves pretty smoothly. And this year we did, I want to say, about 150 kilograms of Saffron, which is about $350,000 worth of product, and it takes, you know, 4 to 5 months to get all of that product over here.
Well, let's talk about some of the distribution points that you have here for Rummy Spice Saffron, and we're talking to Keith Allen. He's one of the co-founders. Where have you gotten this Saffron into? Who's using it? Who's talking about it?
So actually, if anybody who's listening has had a Blue Apron meal lately, Blue Apron's one of our biggest clients, and they have, you know, over 250,000 meals will feature Rummy Spice Afghan Saffron. We hope that introduces a lot of people to what Saffron is and to the high quality of Afghan Saffron. We also sell in grocery stores. We're in about 200 stores across the nation. We're in market baskets in New England, Central Market in Texas, among a bunch of other smaller ones. And then we sell to Frontier Brands, which is a very large wholesale customer. And Frontier's actually been a great customer. They provided a lot of grants for us to continue to build infrastructure in Afghanistan. So we have a really strong partnership with Frontier, and they were one of the first large customers to come on board.
Well, one of the things that you're doing is, you have a high-quality, sustainable product being produced in an ethical manner, and the company chose to be a certified B Corporation. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are a certified B Corporation, but we're also a public benefit corporation. So that's basically a corporation with a double bottom line of social impact and profits. One of the things that we felt strongly at the beginning is that as we were forming this idea, you know, we had the option of being a nonprofit and seeking grants to conduct our business. But we thought that the discipline that comes with trying to create a profitable business and the sustainability of a profitable business was important to follow that business model. And, you know, with that decision, we also felt that the community of B Corporations was where we wanted to be. I mean, B Corp is doing just that. It's doing social impact through business. And so, we're proud to be a B Corp and kind of lead the way in this new movement of social impact for-profit companies.
Well, you've certainly done a great job here. Tell us a little bit about how folks can follow you at Roomy Spice and order some product.
Yeah, we'd love for people to check us out. We're at roomyspice.com. That's RUMISPICE.com. And, you know, as I was saying, we get a lot of support through our customers, and really that's what makes us run. So there's some great products out there. We have Gift Saffron, which is great to use for your home or to give as a gift to, you know, that foodie in your life. We also have some spice blends, and, you know, we're doing some new things with saffron as well. We created a first-of-its-kind saffron gummy gem, which is, you know, like an adult snack. It's a luxurious way to enjoy saffron in a sweet application. So please check us out and see if there's anything you like. And, we'd love to have your support.
Well, we want to encourage all our Veteran Radio listeners to go to Roomy Spice. It's RUMISPICE.com to go ahead and participate. I'm sure you've got a veteran and a friend who might find this as a unique gift, and then it might turn into a regular purchase. This is a great story of some veterans who identified a business opportunity and said, hey, we can overcome whatever challenges are there. Keith, I wish you and your co-founders and the company the best in the upcoming year, and thanks for spending some time with Veterans Radio. And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.